First of all, I would like to thank the organizer for letting me talk here. And let me mention this is a joint work with Andrei Akhachov from CISA. So let me start from motivation. Let me record the definitions and some of this concept, which is probably known to most of you in optimal transportation. So we start from a Riemannian manifold, with delta boundary, with a Riemannian distance d. And suppose we have two Borel probability measure on the manifold, and everyone in here knows that here is the optimal transportation problem. So you minimize the total cost among all the map phi, which pushes mu forward to nu. And of course, the problem is the problem of existence and uniqueness of this optimizer is proven by Bernier and McCann. And so they prove that there exists a unique map which sends mu to nu and minimize the functional in here. And moreover, it's given by the following. So it's composition of some function or gradient of some function with the exponential map. And in fact, more is true. If you put the t in here, then what happens is that this phi t will push this mu forward to phi t pushes forward mu, and this is the optimal map between mu and this phi t pushes forward mu. And this thing is called the this curve of measure is called the displacement interpolation. And I recall the Wasserstein series is the set of Borel probability measure which is absolutely continuous with respect to this, to the Lebesgue measure on the Lebesgue class on the manifold. And a functional is called displacement k convex if the functional has second derivative bound below by k along these displacement interpolation. And so what happens is if you consider the Boltzmann entropy roll of roll, then a result says that the Ricci curvature of the manifold bound below by k is bound below by k if and only if this entropy is displacement k convex. And so what happens is on the left hand side you need all these Riemannian structures and the differentiability to define the Ricci curvature for manifold. But then on the right hand side, you can actually define it for more general metric spaces. And so that's what Villani, Lott, and Sturm did. So they define the right hand side to define the curvature dimension, what they call the curvature dimension condition. So this is kind of a generalized Ricci curvature bound on more general metric measure spaces. However, not so many examples are in these two papers, so not so many new examples. So the next paper which gives examples is the paper by Otta in 08, which says that there is a corresponding notion of curvature on Finsler manifolds called flat curvature. And under some corresponding Ricci curvature bound below, then Otto shows that the manifold satisfies the curvature dimension condition. However, so if you consider the Heisenberg group, which is the very first example of sub-Riemannian manifold, which I'm going to introduce in a minute, Juliet shows that in fact, Heisenberg group doesn't satisfy any curvature dimension condition. So this curvature dimension condition is pretty useless in this sub-Riemannian setting. On the other hand, he showed that the Heisenberg group satisfies some weaker condition called measure contraction property, which I also will introduce later. And so what happened to our paper is that in this paper, Juliet just take the Heisenberg group and use the fact that you can basically write down explicit formula on Heisenberg group for, of everything and then you compute and you show that this is it satisfies the mesh contraction property. And what we do is we basically give a more conceptual proof of this theorem, and actually it generalized to more general context of Riemann manifold. Okay, so let me say what is sub Riemann manifold. So we start from a manifold M, and we have a distribution. So you can consider it as just at each point of the manifold. So we have a manifold M, and at each point X, you attach a subspace of the tangent space to it. So it's like a plane. So it's called delta. So the fiber at X is called delta sub X. And we have on each of these space we put a metric on it. So it's like in the Riemannian case, we have for each tangent space you have a bilinear you have an inner product, and in the sub Riemannian case you put the inner product only on this subspace. And so then you can use this to define the so-called sub-Riemannian distance, which is similar to the Riemannian case. So instead of in the Riemannian case, you minimize among all curve gamma which connects a point x. So let's say this is the distance between x and y. So that is the length of all the infimum of the length of all curve connecting x and y. And that's in the Riemannian case. But in the sub-Riemannian case, the inner product is only defined on this subspace. So instead of informizing over all curves, we informizing over all curves, which is for which the velocity is tangent to this distribution. So gamma dot of t is in delta of gamma of t. And so that is the sub-Riemannian distance. And in many cases, actually, this is not quite well defined because it's not clear whether you can join any point x and y by a curve which is always tangent to these subspaces. But under certain condition, which we always assume in here, called the Pomander condition, then this is always well defined. So I'm not going to go into detail, but under certain condition you can make this well defined, and it's going to be this condition is satisfied in the example that we have. And then there under this condition we can also define the sub-Riemannian exponential map. But unlike the usual Riemannian exponential, which takes a velocity to a point, it takes a covector to a point. So this sub-Riemannian exponential is going to take, so it's going to take a covector alpha and give you a geodesic. So this is a geodesic, just like the Riemannian case. And I'm going to say more about this, but it works by analogy that. This is also, it's pretty much similar to the Riemannian case, but I'll say a few words in a minute how to define it in this case in a moment. And we fix the mesh in mu, and here is the Heisenberg group, an example of the sub-Riemannian manifold. So in this case, M is just R3, and so you have this delta, which is just dx plus 2y dz. So this is a vector field on R3, and this is another vector field on R3, and this is the so-called Heisenberg group. And notice that if you take the Lie bracket of this two vector field, you get the third direction. So if you take the Lie bracket of dx plus 2y dz with 2y minus 2x dz, I think you get 4 for DZ. And so in this case, the bracket of this two vector field gives you the direction which is missing. And maybe a couple, yep. Right, so maybe a couple words before, like, why do we care about these sub-Riemannian manifolds? Because, for instance, if you have some mechanical system which roll without slipping, so for instance, if you have a disk like this, which roll without slipping, so it rolls. So the configuration of this disk is, for instance, the base point in here, x, y, and the direction it travels, which is an angle theta, and another angle in here, which is c. And so the configuration space in here is xy, which is r2 cross the torus, two torus. And the fact that it roll without slipping defines a distribution on this manifold. And so this is a sub-Riemannian manifold is many configurations space of a lot of physical systems, so that's why we are, that's why they're relevant. Okay, so so here is the Mesher contraction property. So so let me say what it is instead of like. Instead of reading this. So what this Mesher contraction property is the following. So suppose you start from a set which is of Mesher not of Mesher zero in the manifold and fix a point x. Then for almost every y in this set you can connect it with a unique two dot six. So this curve in here is a geodesic between x and y. And if you move your point y along this geodesic for time t, for instance, then you get a and you do this for each point on the set, you get a map from the set to another set. And the map, we call it phi sub t of y. And so this defines a map. And so this Mesher contraction property is comparing the set, the mesh of this set with the set of the measure of the image of this phi sub t. So let's say this is the image. So this is phi sub t of u. And so the measure so the metric measure space m, b, and mu satisfy the measure contraction property if mu of the measure phi t of u times this g sub t, which is a combination of k or combination of sine or hyperbolic sine, depends on the constant k. This has to be bigger than or equal to the measure mu of the original set u. So that's called the measure contraction property. No, this is phi inverse, right? This is inverse, right? In here, you should, if you put phi in here, then cancel this inverse. So this is correct. Right. So that's the Mesher contraction property. And so what is interesting about this property is that if you're on a Riemannian manifold of dimension n, then this Mesher contraction property is equivalent to being a Ricci curvature bounded over by k. So this is kind of another generalization of Ricci curvature to other manifolds, and this is part of the work of Sturm in his paper. He also had this Mesher contraction property. And Gillette, I mentioned, he proves on Heisenberg group, he satisfy MCP 05. So although H, remember, is dimension 3, it's actually satisfy MCP 05. So usually in the remaining case, n corresponds to dimension, but this 5 somehow is not the dimension in this case. Yeah, this is sharp. Yep. And he also works on the higher dimension, which is pretty much similar to the three-dimensional case because the Heisenberg group is flat. So everything is... Sorry? Right, so if the Heisenberg group is 2n plus 1, then 5 becomes 2n plus 3. Yeah. Sorry? So MCP05 means you have this property over there with G sub T equal to one of these, right? This G sub T, and n is here. So this K sub T is here, and n is here. Okay. Right, exactly. Right, our work is to generalize this theorem to more general sub-Riemannian manifold. So the sub-Riemannian manifold that we're interested in is called the contact sub-Riemannian manifold with additional symmetry. So we start from a three-dimensional manifold, and we assume the distribution delta is contact, which means the following. So you have this two-dimensional distribution, so contact. So delta is contact, so dimension of this is 2. And in fact, it is given by the kernel of some one form. So this delta is equal to the kernel of some one form. And we need the d sigma. So d sigma becomes a 2 form. So you restrict it to this distribution, which is 2-dimensional. In each 2-dimensional space, it's 2-dimensional. And I need it to be the volume form of the Riemannian metric. So let me write that down also. So the volume form. Or in higher dimension, it has to be a symplectic form rather than volume form. And you can think of it as a non-degeneracy condition. So a two form is pretty much a skew symmetric matrix. So in this case, it will be a 3x3 skew symmetric matrix. And so it has a kernel. The skew symmetric matrix has a kernel. But if the kernel is only one dimension, then it's non-degenerate. And this is the condition, basically. It says that this 2x2, the 3x3 matrix, skew symmetric matrix has rank 2. And then using this, you can define the so-called weak field. So again, this D sigma, again, is like 2x2 matrix, skew symmetric. So it has at least a one-dimensional kernel. And by non-degeneracy, exactly the kernel is one-dimensional. So you have a whole line in this the kernel of this D sigma. So we pick that line, and we use this condition to normalize the vector field so that sigma of E is 1. So there is a unique E which satisfies this two condition, and that's called a weak field. So maybe I should also write that down. And so. And then we need this weak field to be a symmetry. So this weak field is a bunch of things. So it just says that E preserves basically everything, the sub-Riemannian distribution and the sub-Riemannian structure. So and of course it's a one-dimensional action. Well, it's an action, but you can ignore this. So what it means is that this the flow of this vector field preserves the sub-Riemannian metric and the sub-Riemannian distribution. No, this is the definition of contact sub-Riemannian manifold with symmetry. Right, yeah. Right. So a picture we should have in mind is we have a three-dimensional space, which is M, and you have the flow, all lines of E. and then we're going to take the quotient of this, and we should get a two-dimensional manifold. So this is the space of orbits. And, well, it's not usually the downside is not always a manifold, but we're assuming this top that it is. But actually, the whole thing works even when the quotient is not a manifold. And right, and then. No, but that's four dimensional. Right, that's correct. Exactly. Right. So that's a lifting. So start from any Riemann surface, you can construct something like this. Exactly. So you can put lines rather than circles also. And then you define a volume form on M, on this bigger manifold, which is the unique volume form which satisfies this condition. So V1, V2 is the orthonormal vector with respect to the sub-Riemannian metric on this subspace of the tangent space. And E is a weak field which is transversal to this subspace. So these three together give you a volume form. So this condition gives you a unique volume form. And so now we have sub-Riemannian metric from the sub-Riemannian distance on M. We have a volume form mu or a measure. I'm going to abuse notation and call this the measure corresponding to this volume form as well. And we have a manifold, so we have a metric measure space. So we can talk about, again, measure contraction property. But before that, let me give you some examples. So the Heisenberg group, for instance, is an example of this. So in this case, M is R3, right? So up here is R3. And then this delta, again, is just these two vector fields. And the action in this case is just translation in Z direction. So this is exactly in the three-dimensional, in the Heisenberg group case, these curves is basically vertical lines. And now if you quotient it out, you get R2. Right? And the sub-Riemannian metric in this case will be just recreating downstairs. So that's one example. Another example is the so-called Hopf vibration. So you start from the S3, which is a three-dimensional sphere in four space. So let's say it's a subset of C2. And so it's And then we can define, so in this case, S3 will be, in this case, considered as the set of all complex number which is 1, pairs of complex numbers which the norm sums up to 1. And then this defines you an action, which is an S1 action. So in this case, these lines will be circle rather than straight lines. And if you quotient it out, you get S2. So that is this, and there is some sub-Riemannian structure on this, which I'm skipping because the formula is too involved. But this is an example, and there is a hyperbolic version of this. This is like a kind of elliptic version. So this is basically a constant curvature. So this is a constant curvature 0. You'll see in a minute, this will be constant curvature 1. And then there's a hyperbolic version for which the curvature is minus 1. And here is, we need a more generalized version of measure contraction property, which is the following. So you basically do the same thing in here. So you do the same construction, you connect it by a unique geodesic, and then you move the points along geodesic by time t, and then you form this inequality, and the only difference is this g sub t. So in this case, rather than just sine, so if you remember, in the Riemannian case, you only have sine in here, but in the sub-Riemannian case, you have a combination of sine and cosine here, and in the hyperbolic case, you have a combination of sin and cosine here, but everything else are similar. And then another thing to note is that this is exactly MCP 05, okay? So what I call MCP MCP R23, so 023, is just MCP 05. Right. So, right. The motivation will, right. So the motivation will come from the proof. Yeah. So this is the just some definition which at this moment comes from nowhere. Right. So R in this case is like a curvature of the manifold N downstairs, and 2, 3 will be the step. So it's like two distribution, and then one step you get 3. You bracket it, you get the third dimension.
Right. Is there a model space here?
Right, the model space is the what I just introduced.
Heisenberg
will be the flat space. This will be curvature 1. And then there's the hyperbolic version of this, which is curvature -1.
And your function,
yeah. No. This is the correct power. No. Sorry? R is going to be some curvature of the space, which is related to the space, the curvature of the space in here. Okay. Not just that. So we conjecture. So we have some guess that it should be the step. So for general Sub-Riemannian manifold, it's going to be 2, and then the subspace the dimensional substrate generated by the first bracket and the second bracket, and so on. So it's going to be a whole bunch of numbers in general, we believe. Right. Right, exactly. No, 2 is the dimension of the distribution. 3 is the dimension of the first step. K is R. I'm sorry. So this would be K.
So R is K.
Yeah, R is K, I'm sorry. Sorry? Yeah, we replace all the R by K. Yeah. I just, you know, typo. I'm sorry. Other questions? No, general contact manifold, we expect 2N plus 1 here, and sorry, 2N and 2N plus 1, yes. Yeah. For general contact manifolds, it's a work in progress, so. But I think we it's true. 2N, 2N plus 1 should be correct. And so the theorem is that if you have a three-dimensional context of Riemannian manifold with symmetry, so the thing that I just introduced with lots of structure, and suppose the curvature of this manifold N is bound below by R, then the manifold satisfy MCP R23. So that's where it comes from, the theorem. So in other words, it comes from the proof. All these G sub T. And maybe I should mention. So I mentioned that if the quotient is not a manifold, then this theorem doesn't hold. But there are some. So this is something called the Sasakian manifold, and then there is some curvature invariance in there, and that will replace this curvature bound below by the Gauss curvature bound below. So this is more, I think, more intuitive instead of taking the more general case. And a corollary is exactly Euler's result, which says that MCP Heisenberg group satisfy MCP 05. And in fact, the same proof works for Heisenberg group. So it's not. But for more general context of Riemannian manifold, is more involved. And then the Hopf vibration, in this case, also satisfies MCP 223. And the MCP 05 for this Hopf vibration will follow. And as you mentioned, if you satisfy MCP 05, there are some inequality that is satisfied. You satisfy this doubling property and also the weak Poincaré inequality. So. I haven't looked at it carefully. Yeah. But so this is trivial. But yeah, I think. I should look more carefully. Yeah. Right. So these are the corollaries, and So I should sketch a proof. So I have to talk about the sub-Riemannian structure. I mean the exponential map. I don't think. Okay. So let me go very brief because time is running. So we start with a sub-Riemannian metric. So this is going to induce a so-called Hamiltonian function, sub-Riemannian Hamiltonian on the cotangent bundle. And so H is going to take a covector XP and give you some number. So what is that supposed to be? So first of all, you restrict so P is a covector. So this XP, so you restrict it to this to the distribution. So you restrict P to delta sub X. So you get a kind of a dual in this delta sub X. And using the sub-Riemannian metric, then you can get a vector out of this. So you get a vector, V. And the Hamiltonian of XP is going to be the length of V. Let's say 1/2. So this is similar to the Riemannian case, but you have one extra step. And so once you have a Hamiltonian, you can form the Hamiltonian vector field and tensor flow. So you have X dot, if you like local coordinates, that's dhdp, and P dot is minus dhdx. So you form the Hamiltonian vector field, and then you get the flow, which I call dt. And sub-Riemannian exponential is just nothing but the projection of this. So let me draw a picture. So you have a manifold M downstairs, and then you have a point X and the cotangent bundle. And you also have a covector P. And then you want to flow it. First of all, you flow it using the Hamiltonian flow, so you get a curve. So let's say this is V sub T. And then you project it down, back down to the base. You get a point, which I call V sub T of X. And this is exactly the exponential. So it's the sub-Riemannian exponential of P. TP, I'm sorry. And so unlike the Riemannian case, for each velocity you have to do that second. In this case it's not. So for each velocity, you actually get a one parameter family of geodesics. And so it's not good to use tangent bundle to parametrize the geodesic in the sub-Riemannian case, but rather you should use the cotangent bundle. And that is the definition. And using that, in our case, the phi sub t that I defined and I think I erased, it is the phi sub t that I wrote at the beginning, which you move along the geodesic. You move points along the geodesic is exactly given by this expression, which is exponential t times the differential of f, where f is just a function, the distance square function. So remember, we have this map which goes from the point x to from a set, and each point on the almost every point on this set u, you move along the geodesic connecting x and y, and the time t map is going to be phi t of y. And so, in fact, this is just given by this expression in here. And so the goal is to compare phi t low push forward mu with mu. And here is what we use. So if some of you know classical differential geometry, you probably know that all these differential invariants of context sub-Riemannian or sub-Riemannian manifold in general can be found by Cartan's method of equivalence. But we decided to use this recent result of Lee and Solanko because this is more it's more conceptual and it's readily fits into our framework. So what this says is basically that you have a frame ET FT in the tangent space at this point P. So at this at the tangent space at this point, x comma p, you have this frame, this moving frame, which is an analog of the parallel transport of some frame on the, in the Riemannian case. But in the sub-Riemannian case, you have to do it on the potential bundle. So it's, so there are actually two different frames. So, and the EIs, so these EIs are frames again. So this is EI of t, and then you have FI of t. And one property of this frame is that if you push forward this frame using the Hamiltonian flow, the EIs is going to become vertical. And this FI is transversal to the vertical. Again, this is an analog in the Riemannian case of the parallel transfer. And this RI is the analog of the curvature operator in the Riemannian case. So in this case, the curvature operator looks like this. It's R11, R22, and the rest is zero. And in the Riemannian case, you only have E dot equal to F, F dot equal to RE, right, if you remember. Or, you know, the Jacobi field equation looks like roughly like E double dot plus RE equal to zero. So that's the Riemannian case. But in the sub-Riemannian case, it looks like this. And so in this case, so the result only gives you R11 and R22 in an abstract thing. So in this case, we have a specific example of context of Riemannian manifold. And so we should be able to compute this R11 and R22. And after a one-week computation, you found that actually R22 is zero in this case. And R11 is given by H0 squared plus 2HK. So again, this big H is the Hamiltonian. K is the Gauss curvature downstairs. And H0 squared is defined by the weak field. So it's just some other Hamiltonian defined by the weak field. And this H0 is the constant of motion of the sub-Riemannian Hamiltonian system that I wrote down on the right board. In any case, this is not so important. This will go away because this is positive. So this is, again, this is just the parallel transport in sub-Riemannian case. And again, we want to compare phi t lower sub mu with mu. So we let rho sub t be the density of this, the push forward measure of mu by phi t. And the goal is to show that rho t is less than g sub t that we have. So the goal. So that rho t is less than g sub t. So to do that, so we define the so we have to project so we have to look at the differential of this map, right? So it's push forward. So we have to look at the differential of this map. So what we do is we start from some frame downstairs. So we have this fi of t. So in this case, I have also fi of zero, for instance. And I project it down to a frame on the manifold vi of t. So you get some frame downstairs. I think the time is running out. So let me skip this. Let me skip this. So let me say what happens in the Riemannian case, for instance. So in the Riemannian case, what you do is, so you have a geodesic from x to y, and then you take a frame in x and y, in the tangent space of x, and you parallel transport this frame along y, and then you get, and then you write your Jacobi field, your family of, your matrix of Jacobi field along this frame, and you got the equation E double dot plus R E equal to zero. And if you look at the matrix E inverse E dot, which I call S, then this matrix S satisfies the Riccati equation, S dot plus S squared plus R equal to zero, where R is a curvature operator and S is again E inverse E dot. So if you do the same analog in here in the sub-Riemannian case, what you get is the following equation. So you get this Riccati equation, so probably I should have minus in here. So the analog of this Riccati equation in the sub-Riemannian case is given by the following. So it is S dot minus R. R is this curvature operator that we see from the previous theorem. And this C is this matrix. And so these two are not there in the Riemannian case. And this matrix is 1, 0, 1. So this is the sub-Riemannian case. So sub-Riemannian analog of this Riccati equation. And what happens in a Riemannian case is that you take the trace of this equation. If you take the trace of this equation in a Riemannian case, then you get the trace of S and then trace of S squared and then trace of R, which is a Ricci curvature. So you use a Ricci curvature bound, you get the Ricci curvature bounded by some constant. And then trace of S squared, you can use inequality to change it into trace of S, the whole thing squared. So in other words, after taking the trace and doing some inequality, you get an equation, a differential inequality on the trace of S, right? And once you have a differential inequality of trace of S, you can solve, right? You can easily solve using calculus and get all these G sub T from MCP zero, MCP Rn, but in this case, if you take the trace or something, it doesn't work. So what we have to do is we have to use some theorem. So the first theorem that we use is the comparison principle of matrix Riccati equation. So which is the following. So suppose you have two matrix Riccati equation. So it's indexed by S1 and S2. So there are two solutions of two different matrix Riccati equation, and you take their coefficients, so these are matrix, but you take the coefficient and you form these two matrix, and you suppose that one matrix is bigger than the other, and the initial condition is of one is bigger than the other, then the solution will be of one will be bigger than the other for all time. So that's one step. That's the first step. So what we do is, so in here, you see the C and D are just constant, but R1 is the curvature, H0 squared plus 2HK. So we bound this by this new curvature to RH. And now this will be independent of time. And this whole thing the coefficient in this new Riccati equation will be, the coefficient will be independent of time, rather than this one, which R1, which depends on time, because you have a Gauss curvature here. And so using this comparison principle, we can reduce this equation to this one, and again this equation have constant coefficients, and then we use the second theorem, which says that if you have a Riccati equation with constant coefficients, then actually we can solve it completely. So what you do is you again take these coefficients and you form this, you look at this ODE, and you look at the fundamental solution of this ODE, which we call it M1, M2, M3, M4 in here. And then you form this multidimensional fractional transformation. Then in fact, this KFT is exactly the solution of this Riccati equation of constant coefficients. And so, after some computation, you see that rho t is nothing but E. So in the Riemannian case, this will be the trace of S, but in the sub-Riemannian case, it's not. So it's going to be S111, S133. Again, I recall rho t is the density that we need to bound by this G sub t. And so this is equal to this, so that means I have to bound it by, we have to bound S1. And but from the Riccati equation, so from these two theorems, or from the first theorem in here, I can bound S1 by S2, and so that's what I did. So I bound S1 by S2 here. And then by existing computation, I can do whatever, so I can actually bound this, no problem. And so this is how I get this G sub T, which is basically solving this equation explicitly. So I can solve this equation explicitly using this theorem and therefore bound this term on the right-hand side. And that is my G sub T. So that's the end of my talk. Thank you very much.